Chapter 6, A Wolf in Little Red's Clothing. Erica is not happy. In fact, she's spitting mad. Eddie is so glad he's not the adult here. Telling that girl no is not easy. They'd gone back to the clearing around the cabin to hobble together a plan because they were out of fucking time. And it's a good damn thing they did because they'd been wrong. The Creel House is apparently not the place to find their lich. When Hop and I went into the Upside Down to find Will, he was in the library, in like a nest. There were other bodies there, all with their mouths sort of stuck open, like whatever was being done to Will had already been done to them. Grimacing, Joyce puts her arm around Will, who's visibly shaking and gone a little green around the gills. Will swallows in a way that looks painful and stammers, I think you guys were right about Vecna being some kind of lich. If he could come back into this world, he'd be here already. He's not, though. I think he needs a body. I think maybe I'm that body. I think that's why the Mind Flayer was inside me. I think it was. He swallows again, and Eddie has to admire the kid's courage. He'd be puking his guts out right now. I think it was preparing my body for possession. Jesus Christ, Eddie whispers quietly. Well, he can't have you, Mike says vehemently, a surprised look on his face like he hadn't meant to say that out loud. He stands by it, though, putting one scrawny arm around Will's waist. No, he cannot, Elle says with determination. So, Eddie starts, not realizing he has something to say until everyone looks at him. Let me workshop something, because I think you guys have all the pieces, but you're building the wrong picture. Dustin grins. He's seen Eddie get going before, so he must recognize a DM session starting. God, that kid is awesome. Eddie loves him. Last night, when you guys were filling me in, Elle said she found a sister who could cast psychic damage on people, make them see things that weren't there, like Vecna did with Max and the others. And Elle's powers are telekinesis, moving things with her mind. Also, like Vecna, Henry, one, whatever. And you said that Henry told you that when he was forced into the other dimension, he became an explorer, right? You said an explorer. Elle nods, forehead furrowing as she tries to guess where Eddie's going. But he didn't create it, the Upside Down, because you said he's been there since you were much younger and Upside Down Hawkins is stuck in 1983. What if it isn't stuck? What if? Eddie pauses for effect because he can't fucking help himself. What if it was created in 1983 by a terrified little boy whose power is world-building? He turns a look at Will. I don't have powers, Will insists. I'd know, wouldn't I? Eleven stares at Eddie with wonder for a moment longer, but then turns to Will. No, not unless you were very angry or very scared. That is how Papa triggered our powers, how he forced us to use them. She walks over until she's standing in front of Will. Taking his hands in hers, she asks, May I try something? He nods. Mike starts to step forward, obviously confused about who to protect, his best friend or his girlfriend. She shakes her head, and he steps away again. I'm just going to look. Close your eyes. They both do. Everyone seems to hold their breath as a minute ticks by. Then two. Then she opens her eyes and smiles. Will smiles back. They hug, and then Elle turns to Eddie. You are smart. Taking a deep breath, Eddie nods his thanks and launches into the rest. This means we have a bigger problem. From the other side of their circle, Dustin pipes up with, Yeah, if Vecna gets a hold of Will, he won't just destroy the world, he'll be able to reshape it, build a new one. Everyone takes a minute to process that one. Eddie swallows a few times because the urge to vomit is pretty strong. With a low growl, Hopper stands up from where he was leaning against the porch. He's rougher looking now. Head shaved, body gaunt but stronger. His limp is going to slow him down, and he looks resigned about it. Okay, we need a plan. I wish I could tell you kids that you can't go. There's a chorus of complaints as everyone tries to insist they can handle it, but the chief puts his hands up for silence. I said I wish I could, but I can't. The fact of the matter is that most of you have more experience with the Upside Down than the actual adults do. You are, much to my dismay, battle-hardened soldiers. He looks around at all their faces with a sadness Eddie thinks he's always carried, just not as close to the surface as it is today. He lingers on Argyle, and then Erica. "We need at least one person to stay with Max," he finally says, looking at Erica. "No, nuh-uh, I'm not some baby. This will be round three for me. Eddie's new, and this chump with the goofy pants just got here." Her head juts back and forth, and Eddie almost smiles, because he's been on the receiving end of Erica's wrath, and it's not a happy place. Girl stands her ground with the best of them. Hop looks ready to argue, but Steve takes a step forward. "Erica, I need you to stay with Max, because you are brave enough to stand up to people who think they know better than we do. I know you won't let anyone hurt her." She looks like she's gearing up to argue when Steve's voice goes very gentle. "Scoop's troop promise, I'm not giving you an easy task. I'm giving you the hardest one. I need you to protect Max for me. You'll be the only one holding Max's hand if she comes back before we get there. She'll be scared. I don't want her to be alone." She concedes, but she's never going to let them forget it. Eddie can see it on her face. Hands tucked into the back pockets of his jeans, which is very distracting for Eddie, Steve looks around at everyone. Anyone who doesn't want to or can't fight doesn't have to. There's no judgment here. Hawkins has lost more people than I can even name anymore, even some of us. He turns and looks at Eddie. "Max and Eddie died. We got them back, but just barely. If El or I had been even a minute later... Well, anyway, you don't have to fight. Erica could probably use the backup." Everyone seems to brace their feet and set their jaws. Steve smiles that cute little smile he has that's more bottom lip than top lip. "Okay, then." When Steve steps back, conceding the floor back to Hop, who jumps into working out a plan with everyone, he stands close enough to Eddie that their shoulders brush. Eddie wants to kiss him again. Later, though, they have to save the world first, apparently. In the end, Argyle doesn't end up going with them either. Someone has to drive Erica over to the hospital. Jonathan asks Argyle to do it, tells him he's too sweet for battle anyway. Eddie believes it. Guy's a total cupcake. This time around, they don't need to go to the army surplus store. Hop leads their caravan to the police station, which is empty because most of downtown is a smoking crater. Main Street is a ghost town, actually. It must have been evacuated before the pillars of smoke started. Now that those are happening, the military people that had been crawling everywhere seem to be pulling back to regroup. In the locker room of the police station, Hop tries to outfit the humans with bulletproof vests, hoping they'll protect them against claws and teeth. They're all men-sized, though, so they just hinder Joyce and Al. He makes Jonathan wear one, though. Shaking his head at the irony, he tells them he made the mayor pay for them after the November 85 Demodog swarm. Not only have they never been used, they're still sitting here in the middle of the kind of attack they were ordered for. Eddie can almost hear Hop gritting his teeth as he puts one on himself and Jonathan. Opening another cabinet, he hands guns and packs of bullets to everyone who's shot one before. He stuffs more in a duffel bag, adding in the shoulder packs that he says the search dogs had worn to look for Will in 83. Says they won't hold much, but if the boys have to human out, they'll at least have spare shirts and gym shorts, which he also steals from a shelf filled with spare clothes. Robin shakes her head at the gun when he offers. "I prefer Molotovs. I'm no Nancy Wheeler." "We don't have those, but I know where we can get some." He snags a few towels off the shelf and hands them to her. Robin looks sideways at Eddie, who shrugs. Fuck if he knows. Joyce grabs a duffel bag too, dumping in the cans of mace she finds, a couple of police batons, even two cattle prods. Eddie would feel bad, leaving the cops without these things, but the cops in this town are bumbling fucking morons, and they probably shouldn't be armed anyway. He trusts Nancy with a shotgun before he trusts Callahan. He's not even sure Callahan knows his right from his left. Eddie keeps an eye on them from the doorway of the station as Hop walks down the block to the bar with Jonathan, Lucas, Steve, and Robin in tow. On his way, Hop grabs a cute little pot with a dead flower in it off a windowsill. Without even breaking in his stride, he hurls it at the window in the front door, reaching through the broken glass to open the door. The group disappears inside. When they come back out a few minutes later, each is carrying a milk crate full of empty beer bottles. Hopper's crate is filled with bottles of vodka, whiskey, gin, all the cheapest bottom-of-the-barrel booze that tastes and probably burns like gasoline. Robin is grinning from ear to ear. She got her Molotovs. "All right, let's prep everything as quickly as possible," Hop tells them when he comes back to the office. He's decided they'll prep and have Elle open a gate there to hopefully get the drop on Vecna. Robin sets her crate on another desk, pushing a phone and a lamp to the floor. "Kids, come tear these towels into strips for me." She and the others start transferring the liquor in the bottles to the empty beer bottles they'd grabbed. Eddie hears her telling the kids that the beer bottles break easier, teaching them to leave enough air in the tops to feed the fire on its way to its target. Life lessons. Maybe he should teach them how to hotwire a car. Dustin snatches a pair of scissors from the front desk and presents them triumphantly to Mike, who rolls his eyes. Before long, they've got a pile of strips that Steve and Robin start stuffing into the necks of bottles. Taking out the neon orange doggy backpacks, Eddie plays with them until he figures out how they go on, stuffs a t-shirt and a pair of gray gym shorts into the weird little Velcroed pockets, and sets them out on a table they've cleared for weapons. Nancy is with Hop, organizing the weapons and the bullets so they can be grouped together. Girl is a little too giddy about guns. If Eddie liked girls, he'd probably fall in love with her just because he loves a contradiction. He glances up at Steve to see if he's watching Nancy, maybe regretting letting her go. But Steve is staring at Eddie, one side of his mouth quirked up in a smile. Oh. Eddie thinks he could get used to that. The attention of a man who puts his whole heart into things he cares about. Eddie hasn't even let his mind turn it over and examine this yet. He's liked Steve as an abstract for years, wanted to kiss him, sure, but out of spite, maybe a little hate, make him uncomfortable with the reality of Eddie and everything he is. But now, it feels like Steve might actually like who Eddie is. And Eddie wants to kiss him in a way he thinks he's been secretly pining for years, and just lied to himself about. Wants to do more than kiss him, actually. Smiling back, he bites his lower lip, lets his eyes travel down Steve's frame and then back up, arching one eyebrow in challenge. Steve's eyebrows shoot up, his cheeks go a soft shade of pink, and he ducks his head, running a hand through his hair. Eddie wants to squeal and spin around in glee and triumph. Steve Harrington likes him. Eddie wants to pounce on him and touch every single part of him. There's no time, though. Priorities. First, save the world. Then, lick every single mole on Steve Harrington's body. Twice. If the giant X marking the spot is any indication, the library is the Lich's lair. The giant midsection of the X is so close that the front stairs and columns have crumbled and collapsed. The sight is even more terrifying on the upside-down side. The entire building is crawling with vines. And actually crawling, too, the surface is moving as the vines slither and creep over and around each other. This time, they've refused to split up. They're going in together, guns and Molotovs blazing, all at once. Full frontal assault. Hopper, Nancy, Robin, and Strider up front, with Eddie and the boys all shifted, little orange packs clipped around them, surrounding Will, protecting him from all sides. Joyce and Jonathan pull up the rear. Jonathan has Steve's nail bat on his shoulder, a gun in a holster at his hip, and Joyce is carrying a cattle prod. Several cans of mace are stuffed into her pockets. There's no way to get in through any entrance without coming into contact with the vines. Hop sets down the case of bottles he's carrying. Nancy aims her gun toward the door, while Hop and Robin both start flinging Molotovs at the vines on either side of the door. The vines make an eerie shrieking noise as they burst into flame, shriveling back on themselves. Leaving the empty crate outside, Robin grabs the last two bottles to brandish in her hands. She's got a satchel of them hanging at her side to match the one Nancy has hanging on her lower back. Between the two of them, they're carrying about 20 more of the fire starters. The vines keep their distance. Some of them are still on fire, and in some places the grass is still patches of flames. Hop leads them in through the entrance. It's dark and cold inside, like the vines have been insulating the place. It's oddly moist, too. The ground feels springy under Eddie's paws in a way he's not comfortable with at all. He presses into Will's side and feels the kid trembling. When he looks up, Will's eyes are wide with remembered terror. Eddie pushes his thoughts to Mike on the other side of Will.
Will, scared, help.
Mike brackets Will from the other side, whining softly until Will shakes himself and looks down. First at Mike and then at Eddie. He nods, twisting his fingers in the fur on both their shoulders. His trembles don't subside completely, but his breathing sounds more even, and his heartbeat, which Eddie can actually hear, is slowing to a more moderate pace. Looking around them, Eddie sees a few piles of rotted books, covered in what looks like dried slime or mucus. The shelves are mostly still standing, still filled with the lion's share of books, and the middle space is open except for a few tables and some chairs laying on their sides. In one corner is a once brightly colored carpet that Eddie remembers from field trips is where the children's section was. Ahead of them, Strider growls low in his throat. He puts himself in front of Robin, muscles tensed, legs braced, the fur on his shoulders ruffling up the same way it had in his trailer when they'd watched Vecna take Chrissy. What the fuck does Harrington see? But then he smells it too. Decay, but alive. Eddie growls too, wedging Will behind him. Mike's wolf bumps his shoulder as he does the same. Somehow, he knows that the other two wolves have moved up to flanking tightly with Will in the dead center of the four of them.
I'll never understand what you saw in him, Nancy, a girl's voice calls out. You left me to die just so you could spread your legs for King Steve.
The voice taunts cruelly and Nancy gasps, stiffening even as her gun wavers, muzzle lowering to point at the floor.
Barb? She asks, voice quivering.
Barbara Holland, the girl who died in Steve's pool. Eddie wants to tell her that no, whatever that thing is, it's not Barb. But he can't. She knows, though. He knows she's not going to fall for whatever this is. Vecna is just using Barbara Holland's voice to throw Nancy off her game. But then, Barbara Holland steps out from between two of the remaining stacks. Behind him, Eddie hears Joyce gag, and he would be right there with her if he could. She should smell what he can smell. It's way worse than what they see. Barb is 3 years decayed, her skin mottled and covered in old remnants of slime, presumably where something slithered out of her. Her clothes are filthy and torn in a few places. Around her mouth are broken capillaries, black veins spreading across her cheeks and down her throat. She takes another step forward, and there are cracking noises, like her bones are splintering when she moves.
Stay, protect, comes from Strider.
Strider, reminding the wolves that their only job is to protect Will, because as a group, they decided they'd need both him and Elle to finish this once and for all, and they couldn't just leave Will somewhere safe on the other side. But goddamn, it puts the kid in such danger.
Barb, Nancy says again, voice on the edge of tears. I love you. You were my best friend. I would never have left you if I'd known. You know that.
Do I? Barb sneers. Because you're still here with Steve Harrington, like I didn't even matter to you. Strider whines again, pushing Nancy back a few steps. Hop steps in closer to Nancy, grabbing her arm as she takes a step toward what's left of Barb.
Nancy, that's not your friend. That's him. She's just a hallucination or something, Hop warns her, training his gun on Barb.
There's another cracking noise as Barb lifts her arm and pushes several books off the shelf next to her.
Not a hallucination, she mocks.
But, Nancy almost cries, how are you here? You died in Steve's pool. There's a horrible creaking sound that Eddie realizes is Barb laughing.
No, I got dragged through a gate in his pool. I died here. Slowly, painfully, thinking about what a selfish bitch you are the entire time.
Her voice raises with anger, and she takes too many steps toward them, but then her expressionless face freezes, and she stops moving. Elle's got her hand up,
using her power to stop Barb from getting closer. It's him, Henry, inside her body. "No," Nancy gasps, horrified. She sounds like she's on the verge of tears. There's the whoosh noise of fire starting, and then a bottle crashes right into Barb's chest. That same eerie shrieking noise that the vines had made starts up again as Barb collapses backward between the stacks. One of them tilts precariously, and half the books fall to the floor. Several vines behind where Barb had been standing shrivel back, disappearing behind the shelves. Barb's body doesn't move, the flames continue to crackle, and the air smells even worse, like charred, rotted meat. Eddie's stomach recoils. Nancy starts to say something to Robin, probably a thank you, when a giggle echoes through the library. "No, please no." "Eddie, come find me," Chrissy Cunningham calls out in her sing-song voice from somewhere between the stacks. "You left me all alone before, but now you're here, like my very own knight in shining armor." She giggles again, soft and sweet, not even a hint of the brittleness that had been there in the woods that afternoon. "Rescue me this time." There's a blur of white and green as something runs between the shelves, a flash of a strawberry blonde ponytail and a green cheer skirt as she twirls and ducks behind the card shelves. Eddie's shoulder twitches, reflexively going to save her like he couldn't last time. But then he feels Strider think, "Not real, not real, not real." And he remembers that Chrissy's body went to the morgue and then probably to the government. It's not down here like Barb's. It's not real. It's just one of Vecna's hallucinations. There's nothing to save. He's too late for that. He'll always be too late to save her. But he can save Will. So Eddie braces his legs, his own hackles rising. "Eddie," she sing-songs again, giggling clear and bright. "Give him to me and I'll let everyone else go." Chrissy's voice morphs into a guttural, raspy thing. "If you don't, I'll take them all from you, one by one. Make you watch." She floats up between the stacks. Her small frame is untouched by death. Perky ponytail in place, bright smile almost glowing. She's not actually floating, though. She's held up by the vines, wrapped around her waist and shoulders, supporting her body as she dangles in the air. There's a guttural giggle from her, which will probably haunt everyone's dreams, and then Chrissy's arm breaks. "Eddie, please," she cries out, eyes going milky white. "Please help me, you said you would help me." Eddie barks involuntarily, backing up a few steps until Will sets a reassuring hand on his back and he remembers he has a job to do. "She's not real, she's not real." Behind them, Jonathan shouts, "Nance, shoot her." And she does, firing once into Chrissy's chest as her second arm snaps, then a leg. Hop shoots her in the forehead, which is impressive, but there's no blood. Instead, the vines unwind, dropping her limp body. It falls onto a shelving unit, and when it makes impact, the cheerleading uniform becomes a white hazmat suit, the nameless, faceless body of a Hawkins lab employee sent in when they were experimenting, probably. Their dead eyes stare out at the group before gravity pulls it off the shelf and it hits the ground with a sickening squelch. "Whatever's next, it's not real, guys," Joyce reassures them. Hop glances back at her for a brief moment, reassuring himself that she's still safe, probably. There's the click of boot heels on the floor, which should be impossible since it's all carpeted, then the strike of a match. "Steve Harrington, is that you? You really are a dog, aren't you?" Lucas and Strider both growl menacingly. Eddie hears Robin curse. "Not Billy fucking Hargrove." "Do we know each other? Huh, I don't usually associate with dykes," Billy sneers, looking at Robin with disgust as he leans against the help desk in impossibly tight jeans and a skin-tight tank top. There's actually smoke coming from his mouth, and the cherry of the cigarette burns bright. It's not real, though, because Eddie can't smell smoke, or bigot. He growls for good measure, though. "Oh, not you, Munson." Billy looks over at him with a self-satisfied grin. "Figures, birds of a feather, right, queer?" He looks Will up and down, clicks his tongue, and flicks his cigarette over the desk. "You too, kid." Then he looks sharply at Strider, another sneer twisting his upper lip. You teaching them all your faggy ways, pretty boy Steve. Strider lunges, and Eddie knows it's a huge mistake because Billy's face contorts with satisfaction and his whole body leans toward the impact. Since he's watching so closely, Eddie gets to see the look of surprise on his face when instead of an armful of wolf, Billy's lifted off his feet and slammed into the back wall of the library, pinned there by Elle's hand in the air. With her other hand, she's stopping Strider in his tracks. Steve, it is a trick, not real. She releases Strider, and he wisely decides to return to the group, huffing as he prowls back and forth in front of Elle, looking more wolf-like than Eddie's ever seen him. Billy is struggling where he's pinned to the wall. Vines are creeping up and down to him, but Elle doesn't let go. They wrap around his arms and legs, making it look like they're splaying him out and not Elle. Billy laughs. You'll fail. You always fail. Like you failed Max. You and your little band of losers fail every time. She snaps his neck and lowers her hand. The vines hold him up for a few more seconds, and then they pull back, dropping another hazmat-encased lab employee to the stained carpet. What the fuck? Hop drags a hand down his face. Maybe we should burn down the library, Robin suggests. Maybe he'll run out of dead bodies to reanimate, Nancy counters. It dawns on Eddie suddenly what's happening, that they're feeding right into Vecna's plan. He concentrates, pulling his human self out until he's crouched naked in the library. Which, yeah, awkward as fuck, but the backpack is Velcro, so it pulled loose as his body shifted. He digs the shorts out, pulling them on quickly, while Robin squawks, "Fuck, Munson, gross!" and covers her eyes. Nancy just shrugs. You've seen one, you've seen them all. Joyce snorts but tries to cover it up. There's a pause, and then Jonathan says, "Hey!" Gruffly, Hop swears, "Is this the fucking time for dick jokes?" Robin covers her mouth to contain a poorly timed giggle. When Eddie manages to cover his naked ass and junk with a frankly tiny pair of gray gym shorts, he says, "Stop killing them. I think he's using the bodies as temporary hosts." He tugs the shirt out of the pack, yanking it over his head, talking quickly. If this were Dungeons and Dragons, which it kind of is since Will may have created it, then he may have prepared each body as a host in the event that he needed them. But he doesn't want those because they're weak. He wants Will. Will is his phylactery. So I think he's jumping through the vines from body to body until he railroads himself into Will. Will clears his throat, and when Eddie looks at him, his cheeks are pink and he's not meeting Eddie's eyes. It suddenly occurs to Eddie that he's just exposed himself to actual children, but it couldn't be helped, so he promptly forgets about it. Yeah, if I were the DM, that's what I would do, the kid agrees. Wow, a sarcastic and all too familiar voice rings out. Does this mean I'm playing your dumb game? Do I get one of those cool t-shirts? It's Max. They're Max. But not. Eddie knows it's not, because their Max is lying broken in a hospital bed. But she's wearing the exact outfit she was wearing when she played the bait for Vecna, complete with the Walkman. And it's hard to make himself think that it's not the sarcastic little spitfire he's come to know. Max? Elle's voice trembles. Strider backs up, bumping into her, herding Elle away from Max. Elle buries one hand in his fur, grounding herself, probably. No, Elle, that's not Max. She's here somewhere, but that's not her body, Eddie warns, hands curling into fists but not leaving his position as guard. She's in here, with me, not Max taunts, sounding so much like Max it almost hurts. Then she smiles sweetly, excitedly saying, I can hear her crying. Do you guys want to hear it? She opens her mouth, and the sound of Max crying spills out. Please? Lucas. Lucas, help me. I'm trapped. I don't want to be alone. Elle, where are you? There's crying and harsh sniffles, but the Max in front of them is smiling around her wide-open mouth that she's using like a bullhorn. The Max voice, Eddie doesn't know if it's real or not, screams and then gurgles like she's being choked. The sound of crying is still there between the choking noises. Steve, please don't leave me here. Please, please, Steve. There's a few gasps as whatever was choking her lets go, and she sucks in air. Her tears and crying are more frantic now. Guys, please, please, I don't want to die anymore, I don't. Not Max snaps her mouth shut, and the voice immediately cuts off. God, she's such a baby, right? She says, like they're in on a joke with her, rolling her bright blue eyes. Lucas shoots forward, launching himself over a table, growling and snapping, tackling Not Max to the ground. Eddie backs up close enough that he almost steps on one of the other wolves, and Will has to put his hands on Eddie's back to keep him from getting knocked back. He shouts at Mike and Dustin to stay. Hop and Nancy both raise their guns, but they can't get a shot with Lucas in the way. Robin has a Molotov in each hand, but has the same problem. Not Max has her mouth open again, taunting Lucas with the sound of Max crying. Behind him, Joyce shouts, "The vines!" and zaps one of the vines with her cattle prod. Shockingly, it shrieks and pulls back. Eddie leaves the fighters to deal with Lucas and Not Max, turning his attention to the vines, which must have been slowly creeping in around them. They're almost surrounded. "Buckley, fire! We need fire!" he shouts. Robin turns, throwing one Molotov at the vines snaking in toward Eddie's feet. She runs over, throwing the second over Mike to crash into the bramble of vines slithering toward them on that side. "Here," Robin hands Eddie a bottle. Dustin and Mike are bracketing Will, Jonathan and Joyce are zapping or smashing the vines creeping toward them from behind, so Robin and Eddie both throw a cocktail on the larger tangles of vines on either side. Will is still clutching onto the back of Eddie's borrowed t-shirt, and Eddie hears him whisper, "I can do this, I can do this." There's nothing but the crackle of fire and the faint shrieking and hissing as the vines pull back from the flames, and then there's a scuttling noise that Eddie will hear in his nightmares. A thick, half-rotted book scampers out of one of the piles, opens up, and clamps down on a vine. The vine tries to pull itself out of the pages, and when it can't, shrieks painfully, pulling back with the book still clamped down on it. "What in the actual fuck was that?" Eddie thinks, just before he hears Will let out a breath and say in awe of himself, "I did it." "That was you, kid?" Eddie asks, glancing over his shoulder at Will's pale face and wide grin. He nods before turning to look at a pile of books on the floor. Those two grow gross little legs that look like naked baby legs, scamper, and there's really no other word for it, over to the vines where they start biting and snapping. As Eddie's turning back to give the kid a high five, there's a wounded-sounding yelp, the snap of a bone, a sound Eddie knows all too well at this point, and then Lucas's wolf form is tossed across the room like a rag doll. When he collides with the front desk, he lets out another horrible yelp and collapses to the floor. The vines start to creep in his direction, but a small army of books leaps off the desk above him, jumping into the fray. They've got rows and rows of teeth now instead of pages, and Eddie shudders. He may never read again. Not Max is on her feet again. She flings her hand out, and Elle goes crashing into the desk as well, landing on top of Lucas's prone body with a cry. Not Max looks directly at Will. "Give him to me." "Never!" Nancy shouts, raising her gun. Not Max throws her hand out again, jerking the gun out of Nancy's grip, sending it clattering into the far corner. She makes a flickering motion, and Nancy flies back, landing on the vines and a few of the books. The books don't bite her, but the vines immediately reach for her. Jonathan lunges forward, whacking at the vines with his, Steve's, nail bat, giving Nancy time to pull free. She digs out a Molotov from her bag of extras, lighting and throwing it into the pile of vines with vehemence. During the commotion, Eddie leans in close to Will, whispering, "We need to trap him inside something that he can't open while we burn all the vines." Nodding, Will says, "I have an idea. Jonathan, Mom, and Robin can protect me. You wolf out again and tell the others to distract him while I get it ready. Make sure the vines are off of him when I yell." Eddie nods, pulling his shirt over his head and pulling the wolf out as he shimmies out of the shorts, so no one has to see his junk this time. Will crouches to stuff them in his doggy backpack and reattach it around Eddie's shoulders and chest. When he stands, he must motion to his mom and brother, because they close in tight. Robin's been watching, so she closes in too. "Will, plan, distract," Eddie sends out to the other wolves, with the idea of taunting Not Max from all sides. It's all he can send. Full sentences are impossible. They get the idea. Dustin and Mike follow him out of their guard positions, while Lucas and Elle, who are back up on their feet now, rejoin the group. Lucas has healed enough, Elle has a gash on her forehead, blood dripping from her nose, and they're both limping just a bit. They leave Elle with Hop and Nancy, and collect Strider as they circle Not Max, snapping their teeth at any vines that slither toward them. The feral books are still protecting the line. Will must have changed most of the books in this area of the library. There seem to be hundreds of them in varying states of decay, all snapping, biting, or attacking the vines in some way. Eddie would swear that each section's books have morphed into some different kind of little book monster. The ones with the rows and rows of horrifying teeth all seem to be from the horror section. "Oh, the puppies want to play," Not Max taunts. "How does it feel, knowing you all failed her? And not just once, but for weeks, months even." Through the mental connection, Eddie can feel Strider's pain at that, his guilt, his hurt. There's no time for reassurance, and this isn't Max anyway, so Eddie lunges in, twisting at the last minute to throw his weight against Not Max's legs. She barely moves, though, batting him away with a flick of her wrist. He slams into a shelf, it teeters but doesn't fall, and Eddie pulls himself to his feet as Dustin leaps toward Not Max. When she turns toward Dustin, Lucas rams into her from the back, her legs give out, and she falls to her knees. Both Lucas and Dustin fly back, yelping as they slam into tables and shelves. Eddie and Strider jump toward her, pulling at the arms even as she tosses them both off. Through it all, the vines attempt to grab their legs, winding around Not Max's own to keep her steady against the assault. After a few minutes, Will shouts, "Red Leader, this is Gold Leader!" And the rest of that quote is, "We're starting our attack run." So Eddie knows it's time, hopefully without alerting Not Max. God, he loves these little nerds. He pushes the idea of pulling the vines away from Not Max to the rest of the pack, and charges forward, biting down hard on one of the vines wrapped around her left leg. The other wolves join him, yanking at the vines with their fangs. There's a weird metallic scraping sound, but Eddie ignores it. Not Max spins, flicking her hands out at each of them, sending each wolf sprawling. Before the vines can snake back toward her, though, the book army is crowding around her. What can only be described as eldritch monsters spill from the pages of the books as they snap at the vines trying to get back to Not Max. The shelves from the metal bookshelves behind Not Max suddenly detach from the bookshelves and close around her like a flower, like the face of a demogorgon. A metal rosebud. The edges immediately seal together, and it becomes an impenetrable metal egg. They can hear angry screaming coming from inside as it floats a few feet off the ground. The vines are screaming too, writhing, angry, hissing. Will shouts, "Burn them! Burn them all!" And Robin grins, wild and unhinged. She and Nancy and Hop start launching Molotovs into all the biggest patches. "We're gonna need more fuel," Hop shouts. "Those things were all over the outside of the building, too." Strider sends the idea of following to the wolves, and they all follow him as he races out of the library and down the street. The bar in the Upside Down is the same, except the window isn't broken, and none of them can throw a pot like this. Strider sends the idea of shifting to all the wolves, and they do, quickly donning shorts and shirts and avoiding eye contact with each other, in a way that reminds Eddie of locker rooms. Steve grabs a flower pot and does the same thing Hop did, throwing it at the glass and opening the door from the inside. Pretty soon, they've all got milk crates of liquor and towels and are headed back to the library half a block down Main Street. Now that Eddie is looking at the shirts on the other people, he groans, disgusted. They're all the same, so Eddie's shirt proudly proclaims him to be property of Hawkins PD. He's gonna kill Hopper. Back in the library, Elle is still floating the metal egg with a cacophony of angry screaming coming from inside. Most of the vines inside the building are burnt to a crisp. Several patches of carpet are on fire. The group is still huddled protectively around Will, and all around their feet is a veritable horde of carnivorous books. One of them has tentacles coming from between its pages. Eddie's hoping it's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and not a Lovecraft novel, because they really don't need a racist carnivorous book monster. "We don't have to make cocktails, just torches," Hop says, taking Steve's bat from Jonathan and smashing a wooden chair with it. He wraps one of the towels around the end of one of the chair legs, grabs a bottle of vodka and soaks the towel, before handing it off to Robin, who Eddie's pretty sure says, "Wee!" The others pick up the other three legs, repeating the motions while Hop smashes two more wooden chairs. Pretty soon, they're all armed with one except Elle, who's still holding the metal egg with Not Max inside. They take their torches, dipping them into an open flame before they walk outside. Eddie grabs the extra crate of still full bottles. Elle ushers the egg outside, while the others split up into two groups, circling the building and lighting vines on fire every few feet. They don't seem to be growing out of the ground anywhere that they can see. They're like an entity all their own. And there don't seem to be vines anywhere but the library anymore. Dancing around behind Steve and Robin as they light things on fire, Eddie tosses half-filled bottles up high above the cluster of flames racing up the vines. They break, splattering the vines with booze that runs down, dripping everywhere. When the flames meet the alcohol, they burn hotter and brighter, spreading out to interconnect to the other trails of flames. They forget to pay attention to their surroundings as they all gleefully light the building on fire, though, and when they get back to L by the side entrance, they're surrounded by demodogs, a couple demogorgons, and a flock of demobats. The bats make Eddie's stomach fall out. He can taste his own blood again. He knows it's just a memory, but that means it happened and he does not want to repeat. Nancy brings her second gun up, since her first was lost in the library, Hop 2. Joyce and Jonathan brandish their weapons. The wolves are very aware that not only are they not armed, they're human, barefoot, and barely clothed. One by one, they all brace their feet, though, ready to protect Elle and Will with their lives if they have to. "Wait," Will says, pushing past his mom, who tries to grab him. She misses, but Will's barely aware of her. All of his attention is on the monsters. His fists clench at his sides. Eddie can't see his face, but his shoulders look determined. It happens to the bats first. They start to shake and screech, flapping away from the circle on leathery wings that flap once, twice, and as they flap again, their wings become rows of feathers, their many tails pull in, and their fangs elongate into beaks. Ravens. Will changed them into ravens. As an unkindness, they fly off together, perching along rooftops in the distance. A demodog charges at the group, and in mid-leap, its gray mottled skin morphs into fur, and it lands at Dustin's bare feet as a wolf. Everyone else turns to kill it, but Dustin just coos and puts out his knuckles to sniff. The demodog gives him a few sniffs and then turns to race off into the woods. The other demowolves follow as Will changes them, too. One of the demogorgons unfurls its face, hisses, and makes that awful clicking noise that they make. Mid-cry, it becomes a lonely roar, and a bear drops down to all fours, shaking its head in confusion. The rest of them drop down as bears, too, and all of them lumber off, uninterested in the group of humans. Will sags and almost falls, but Jonathan is there, propping him up. "That was the coolest thing I've ever seen," Dustin says in awe. The other hobbits nod, murmuring their agreement. Eddie does too, because that was the coolest thing he's also ever seen. Behind them, one corner of the library caves in on itself, making them all jump and scream in surprise. The entire building is engulfed in flame now, and the vines are gone, disintegrated by fire. They back further away, Elle bringing the metal prison with her. "Is everyone ready?" she asks, blood dripping freely from both nostrils. "Will?" He nods, and when she lets go of the egg, it drops to the ground and cracks open like a regular egg. Not Max doesn't step out, though. This time, it's a tall, gangly blonde man with piercing eyes. If anyone asked Eddie, he'd probably say he's attractive. Luckily, no one asks. They probably should have made a plan. Eddie is realizing that certain members of this party are not great at planning ahead. He really needs to get them into a campaign. They should be wolves for this. He yanks off his shirt, shifting even as he drops his shorts. The others follow suit, each only a breath behind in their transformation. Henry Creel flicks a long-fingered hand out, tossing Robin, Hop, and Nancy to land about 10 feet away. Robin lets out a pained cry and Strider growls, launching himself at Henry. He swipes his hand this time, tossing Strider across the clearing and onto a half-standing Hop and the girls. They go down again, and Strider yelps painfully. Eddie crouches low, growling deep in his throat. He feels the boys flank him. He sends out Distract to them, because he knows his Hellfire kids understand how to fight the BBG. In-game, tanks get in there and take the hits, hopefully weakening the bad guy while they distract him from the spellcasters and ranged fighters who dole out the big damage. They're the tanks. They surround Henry, lunging in two at a time but never close enough to catch him. He turns slowly in a circle, clasping his hands together and smiling in a way that reminds Eddie of little boys who hurt animals for fun. He never liked those boys. Henry bends at the waist, like he doesn't care if they go for his face, and he swipes at Dustin, Mike, and Lucas, sending them careening away from him. They all yelp on impact. When Henry stands up, he throws a hand out toward Eddie and another toward Strider, who just rejoined them. Henry isn't close enough to touch them, but Eddie feels the hand close around his windpipe anyway as his paws lift up off the ground. They're both whining, kicking at the invisible hand at their throats. Henry grins triumphantly, standing tall with both wolves held out on either side of him. Hop and Nancy open fire from two different directions. Robin throws one of her last Molotovs, lighting the creepy orderly uniform he's wearing on fire. He really hopes that they're coming up with a plan while Henry's pulling a Darth Vader on him, because Eddie prefers being a bard to being bait. "I showed you things, shared secrets with you," Henry says, looking at Elle. The flames on his clothes have dried out, but his clothes are undamaged. It's just an image he's projecting. "I was going to share everything with you, sister. We could have ruled together." "Never," Elle says, wiping the white of her sleeve across the never-ending drizzle of blood gushing from her nose. Henry takes a step toward her, but freezes. His eyes go white, and his body tenses. Eddie falls hard to the ground with a yelp, hears Strider do the same. They're both panting and gasping for breath. Shoulders and feet both braced for battle, Elle suddenly screams so loud it hurts Eddie's ears. She thrusts one hand out, fingers bent like she's holding something, and lifts Henry's prone body into the air. She squeezes her hand around nothing, and Henry's arm cracks. Then the second cracks, both cocked at weird angles. Eddie's stomach roils at seeing this again, but he, Strider, and the other wolves have all lined up in front of Elle and Will and the others, so he stands his ground. Henry's leg breaks and he starts struggling in the hold. The other leg breaks as well. There's a guttural scream as his jaw cracks off to the side, and then a high-pitched buzzing sound as his eyes pop and blood runs down his ruined cheeks. Suddenly, he bursts into flame, burning for several minutes before Elle closes her hand and the flames go out. All that drops to the ground is a charred husk. Steve shifts, staying crouched to protect the eyes of the kids and his own dignity. "Max, she's there. Just barely, she's inside. I can feel her. Elle..." But Elle has collapsed in Hop's arms. There's so much blood running out of her nose that her white shirt front looks like a red bib. Her cheeks are streaked with tears, her fingernails are bleeding, and her breaths are too shallow to be sleep-induced. Eddie thinks maybe she's in a coma. He doesn't blame her. Will stands on still wobbly legs. "I think I can help and finish him for good." He looks at Vecna's broken, mutilated body. It's nothing more than a pile of charred meat and bones now, but they know from experience that that doesn't make it harmless. Will whispers one of the most powerful spells in Dungeons & Dragons. Disintegrate. Vecna's body hums again, vibrating, and then explodes into a small cloud of dust. Left behind are five small glowing orbs, four are like balls of light, maybe the size of a golf ball. The fifth is somehow dark light, black but still glowing. As Eddie watches, it bobs away from the other four. Suddenly, a boot slams down, crushing it, splattering black goo everywhere as Hopper stomps on it, twisting his boot back and forth. The other wolves send groans and giggles through their minds. Strider sends Eddie the idea of Hopper crushing some kind of fleshy slug on the floor of the mall. He'll ask later. The four lights left behind start to stray as well. Two of them go away from the party, breaking into tiny light particles and then fading away as they go. The third heads toward Eddie, the light brushing the fur on his cheeks as it dances close. It almost sounds like a giggle, and Eddie knows it's Chrissy. She brushes against him again, and then follows the other two lights, breaking apart as she goes as well. Like pixie dust. Star stuff. The fourth light stays with them. Lucas must have shifted at one point, because he's back in his shorts and that horrible Hawkins PD shirt. He cups out his hands, and the ball of light lands in them. I got you, Max. We're going home. End of chapter 6.